Thank you. So I would like also first to thank the organizers. Having a really good time here. Can you hear me? Hi. Yeah. No? Yeah. Okay, so this is based on a joint work with Julien Degore, Sophie Laplante, and Jérémy Roland, which you can find on the archive under a different name, but probably you'll find it if you look for it. Okay, so our starting point again is this EPR experiment, which I guess everyone heard about. I'm just going to fix the language here. So we have these two players, Alice and Bob, and they share some entangled state. And for the purpose of this talk, they will make a measurement, but the measurement will be chosen from a finite set, so I can just describe it using some, I don't know, binary string, for example. And they get an output also in a finite set, A for Alice and B for Bob. And, of course, we'll note from Bell's theorem that the correlation between the output here is non-local. We cannot explain it using hidden variables. And the question that we're going to work on here is, since it's a mysterious phenomenon here in quantum physics, can we maybe explain things a little bit more by having a quantitative approach on non-locality? So people have been working on quantifying non-locality, and some theses here have been written in different languages, even. And one of the sort of obvious way of doing that, of quantifying non-locality, so one thing that was introduced, so since you cannot simulate the correlation between the output using only this hidden variable, or what we call shared randomness in computer science, maybe we can do something if we also, in addition, we give to the players the ability to speak. Here there's a communication channel between the players. And the way we quantify non-locality is by counting how many bits of communication are required to simulate these EPR types experiment. So there's been some work on this problem. It was introduced by different authors, sometimes independently of the others. That's why this curve here goes first up and then down. Also, the contexts are a little bit different. But yeah, there are also more recent work on this problem that I don't mention here. I mean, it's still active. I mean, there's still some work on this question. All right, so this is the first notion, and then our goal is to compare it with Bell inequality violation, which I will introduce later. So we have these motivations from physics, of course. What we're interested in this information theoretic perspective. But so in some sense, what we are going to do is to apply some tool that comes from computer science. And so the tool is communication complexity. And as it's often the case, by applying this tool, we'll learn something about the tool itself. So I won't have a lot of time to explain this here, but yeah. It's also interesting for computer science, all this problem. But, and in general, I mean, the problem here is to understand the relation between non-locality and computation. So we're really in between these two areas of physics and computer science. Okay, so the rest of the talk is the following. First, I'm going to introduce the model of non-signaling distribution. So this is very close to what Antonio did in the previous talk, except I need just a little bit more, so I will just do it. Then I'll introduce the notion of violation of Bell inequality and how we turn it into a quantitative approach. The main theorem of the talk comes in part three. We're going to prove a lower bound on the communication cost based on Bell inequality violation. And using the same ideas, more or less, we then can I can show you two different things. The first one is how we can say something on the gap between the quantum and classical violation, or this is almost equivalent to talking about upper bound on maximum violation of Bell inequalities by quantum states. And then also, I can show you some upper bounds on the communication cost, based also on violation of Bell inequalities. So what we're going to do is to formalize the problem in the following way. There's a distribution P here that is known both for, by Alice and Bob. And P is conditioned by a pair of inputs, X and Y. And for each pair X and Y, there is a distribution on the output. And what the player have to do is simulate this distribution. All right? And we're going to, the distributions we're going to look here are non-signaling, which means that essentially if you give them as a black box, you cannot use them to communicate. And this is what's written here in these equations that we saw several times. So if you look at the marginal distribution on A, it's independent on Y, the input of Bob, and vice versa. If you look at the marginal distribution on Bob's output, then it's independent of Alice's input. Right, so now let me give, once again, a few facts on the structure of this distribution, maybe more from an operational point of view. So the simplest thing we can do in this scenario where the players have to simulate something is we give nothing to the players. We don't give them any sort of randomness and no communication at all. Then what Alice can do is just, after receiving her input, what she can do is just apply some deterministic function to compute the output, right? And the same for Bob. So for this distribution, we have this expression here in term. It's a product of delta function. And then if I add some randomness, I give this random string to the players, what they can do is basically choose a strategy with a given probability. So this is a convex distribution over these local deterministic distributions. Right, so let me draw a picture with this. So formally, you can think of this P here as a long vector. And so this is in the picture is in the underlying vector space, for example. And I have some points that corresponds to this, to the points here correspond to the local deterministic strategies, like this. And the set of local distribution is just the convex hull of these points. And so a Bell inequality in this picture is just actually any hyperplane. My picture might be confusing because it doesn't have to be a facet here. But, I mean, that's what we're going to use mostly. All right, then come, of course, the quantum distributions. So this is the scenario in which the players share some entanglement. And remember that we want to simulate any non-signaling distribution. So this is just one specific case here. So in general, there's no, well, at least I don't know any nice description of these distributions. So here is the picture. We have this this set Q that includes L, and a hyperplane now that a hyperplane whose support is this Q here will call it a Tsieradson inequality for some reason. And then we have the whole set of non-signaling distributions, which contains everything, and it's determined by these two equations here. All right, a few facts about this, this structure. So the inclusions are strict. It was also mentioned by Antonio in the previous talk. C is a polytop. I think it's pretty clear because it's essentially it's fully determined by linear equations and inequalities. And finally, So this is what I need in addition. So you remember that to build this set L, we took some points, and we took the convex hull of these points. Now, if I, instead of taking a convex distribution of this point, I take an affine distribution, which means that, so I will assign a weight to each one of the extremal points, and the weights have to sum to one, but they don't have to be necessarily non-negative. It can be anything. It can be larger than one or smaller than zero. So what I get is exactly this set C. Well, you have to take the intersection with the set of probabilities, but essentially this is what we need. So we won't need this fact, we won't need this theorem here. It's just, I think it gives a lot of intuition of what follows. But also I think it's not really well known, although it was proved several times, by also independently by several, well, in different contexts by different authors, some of them maybe here. So, yeah, I think this is good to know just for the intuition of what follows. So, one reason to look at the whole set of non-signaling distribution is not only that we want to apply our result to some abstract thing, it's also because within this model, we can also encode Boolean functions so that the lower bound that we're going to prove on the communication cost is also a lower bound on the traditional communication complexity of Boolean functions. So the way we're doing this is the following. So fix a Boolean function. So I choose plus and minus one outputs here. So, and the corresponding distribution is also defined over Boolean outputs, plus and minus one. And if the value of the function is plus one, then the two players have to output the same thing, A equals B equals plus one, or A equals B equals minus one, both cases with probability 1/2. And if the value of the function is minus one, then they have to output opposite values. So this is really reminiscent to how we define an XOR game. So there will be a talk of Tsuyoshi Ito on non-local games tomorrow. And for example, let me give you an example. We can encode, for example, the equality function in the following way. So both players receive an input, which is, remember, a binary string. And if the two inputs are equal here, this is the probability distribution over the output. So with probability 1/2, they both output minus one, and with probability 1/2, they both output plus one. And the opposite, if X is different from Y, they here output different outputs, both with probability 1/2. Again, for the structure of this polytop, I mean, this whole structure here, we have a different structure for any choice of the input and output set here. But in general, this Boolean function, this distribution that come from Boolean functions are interesting also because they are extremal points here. So for this reason, I mean, it's also interesting to understand causality. I just forgot to say something about this encoding here. So in traditional communication complexity, you will give the players, well, players can communicate, and at the end, Bob outputs the value of the function. So, whereas in the scenario of simulating this distribution, both players output something whose product is the value of the function. So you can see that if, for example, Alice just sends A to Bob, then Bob is able to recover the value of the function. And, well, the traditional communication complexity of this function and simulating this distribution may only differ by one bit. So this is essentially the same task. Here I am. So we already mentioned the communication cost problem, although now we have a much more general model. Well, where what we want to do is simulate any non-signaling distribution. And similarly, we can introduce the notion of Bell inequality violation. So a Bell inequality is, in general, just a hyperplane in this space here. So a hyperplane is just defined by a linear functional. And we need some sort of... Well, we want to have a something quantitative, so we need some normalization here. And the way we normalize it is the following. We say that the for any local distribution, this should have an L here, the value of this this functional here on any local distribution is bounded by 1 here. It's between plus 1 and minus 1. And then the Bell inequality, what I call here the Bell inequality violation, or maybe the maximum Bell inequality violation, is just the max over all normalized Bell inequality of this the violation by the distribution P. Sorry. So on this picture, we have this hyperplane here that will correspond to B equals 1 for some B. And if it's normalized, then the value on one side here is bounded by 1. So the whole L here is on one side of the inequality, and P is on the other side of the hyperplane. Now, there's been also a lot of work, especially in the last years, on quantifying how much you can violate a Bell inequality. So I'm especially in the last years, I mean, even there are a lot more than, well, a few more than that that I couldn't write here. But essentially, since this problem, since mathematicians and computer scientists started looking at this problem, there's been a lot of new ideas to attack this problem. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is to prove the following result. The communication cost on the simulation, the minimum amount of communication required to simulate the distribution P is at least the log of the Bell inequality violation here. So the 0 here, the subscript 0 stands for exact simulation. And the idea here, what would be nice, since we have this vector space structure, what we'd like to do in some sense is have some notion of distance. Remember that if P is in L, then you can sort of simulate it by definition with no communication, right? So what we want to do is make clear the intuition that if you're far away from L, then it requires more and more communication. And the way we're doing it is we dilute the distribution P by adding some noise to it. Here it is. And essentially, the distance will be the amount of noise required to make P local. But, well, we need an additional step. Which is using this new distribution here, this diluted distribution, we'll write the original distribution that was here as an affine distribution of local distribution using this theorem, well, which matches the theorem that I mentioned previously. And then the last step will be to use duality to conclude. So what do we mean by diluting the distribution, or how we do it operationally? So start with the distribution that is not in L. And we assume that there is a protocol using T bits of communication. Remember that inputs come from a finite set, so there is always a protocol which consists of sending the input to the other player. but there might be something better. And so let's T denote the number of bits that are exchanged in the best protocol. And what the players will do, what we want to do is remove the communication here. So what the players will do is, instead of sending bits, they will just guess the communication. All right, so using the shared randomness, they pick a random, well, they pick some transcript at random. And from Alice's point of view, she has this input X and the transcript T. So what she can do, well, what she has to do now is look at if they are consistent, which means is the transcript T a valid transcript that could have happened on input X, right? If it is the case, then she just outputs whatever she would have done in the original protocol, right? Otherwise, she just outputs random output according to her marginal distribution, right? So if it's a T-bit protocol, then there are 2 to the T possible different transcript. So fix the inputs, fix the randomness, then the probability of, well, that the probability that T is exactly the communication that would have occurred on input X and Y is 1 over 2 to the T. So with probability 1 over 2 to the T, what we have is just the original distribution here. And with remaining probability, it's just the product of the marginal distributions, right? And by construction, this distribution P prime is local. Right, now here we are. What we do is just invert this equation and write P as a function of P prime and the product of marginals. The coefficients that I have here in front sum to 1. And what I get is exactly what I promised. I have an expression of P as an affine combination of 2 local distributions. All right, and the notion of distance now, what I call nu prime on this slide. So if I sum the coefficients, they sum to 1. But what we do is sum them in absolute value, right? So the new tilde here is just the minimum over all decomposition of P as an affine combination of local distributions, right? This is a decomposition as an affine distribution of local distribution. So that's why this coefficient sum to 1. And I take the minimum of the sum of coefficients in absolute values, right? I will just give another intuition in the next slide. But by what we just did, by diluting the distribution, what we just proved is that R0 is lower bounded by essentially log of nu tilde. Just forgot the smaller coefficients. Right, so here is another intuition for this. If I just group here in the decomposition, just take any decomposition, you can group the positive, I mean the terms whose coefficient is positive and the terms whose coefficients are negative, and you can always have this expression here just as a combination of the two, and that corresponds to this picture here. And essentially up to this fine operator here, my distance is just the quotient of this distance between P plus and P minus, and the distance between P and P minus, or the opposite, actually. All right, or what I can say just a little bit more. If I want to decompose an element of that is inside of L, I don't need any negative coefficients, right? Because L is just the convex hull of these local distributions, right? And the negative coefficients appear when you sort of try to exit from L. And the further you want to go, the more negative coefficients you need, right? And the last step, you won't be surprised if you ever try to dualize some, well, this here essentially is a linear program, but you don't even need that. This is just convex programming. What you have is exactly what we want, right? These two things here are equal by just the duality of convex programming. So the new tilde is a lower bound on, well, log new tilde is a lower bound on communication complexity, and new tilde and new are equal. At this point, I shall say that there is a very nice proof of this theorem that works directly on the dual. You don't need the primal expression here by Perez Garcia, Palazuelos, and Villanueva. Unfortunately, the paper is not available anymore because there was a mistake in another part of the paper, so they are waiting to fix this mistake, and maybe at some point this proof will be available. The reason I presented this one, actually the proof is even more general and maybe simpler also. The reason I presented this one is that I need this primal expression for the next parts. Okay, everything I've done using the local polytop, I can do exactly the same using the set Q. Distill your distribution until it enters the set Q, invert the distribution, blah, blah, blah. And what I get here is this measure gamma 2, which can be also by duality interpreted as the maximum violation of what I call a Tiraldson inequality. And it's a lower bound on quantum communication, which means the number of, well, not qubits, but the number of bits if you share entanglement. All right. Now I move to the next topic. It's about using the structure of these non-signaling distributions. We can say something directly on the gap between gamma 2 and nu, or equivalently, we can say something about the maximum value of nu for a quantum distribution. Right, so first, let me say that there's something known for this problem in the case of Boolean distributions with uniform marginals. This is not a big, it's a restriction, but let me say that it includes maximally entangled states and Boolean functions. Well, the way we define Boolean functions comes into this picture here. And essentially, for a quantum distribution in that case, the value of 2 is upper bounded by a constant, which is known as the Grothendieck's constant. So this is just a sketch of why this is true, but essentially I would say that Grothendieck's inequality is something deep in mathematics, but there is also this deep connection that was made by Tiraldson between quantum distributions, and, well, in this case, you can characterize the quantum distributions as inner product of real vectors. That's what makes the thing work. Right? Now, for a arbitrary output set A and B, we can sort of use this result on the Boolean case to extend over arbitrary outputs, and we prove essentially that the value of nu for any non-signaling distribution P is upper bounded by some constants times the size, the product of the size here, times the value of gamma 2. So for quantum distributions, you have gamma 2 equals 1, so this gives you an upper bound on the value of nu, which is the product of the size of the output set. That also gives you a negative consequence, is that essentially this lower bound on on the communication cost is not tight for some reason that I'll show later. Here again, there is another proof for that, actually a better one. This upper bound here is not tight, and you can do better than that, which is even worse for communication. And the proof was made by Jung and Palazuelos, and this uses operator space theory. So it's much more involved than what I'm going to show in the next slide. I guess. So what we do is just, the way we prove this upper bound is just reducing to the Boolean case, essentially. So what we want to do is start from a distribution P, and we want to give an expression of P as an affine combination of Boolean distributions. And then for each one of these Boolean distributions, we'll apply this result that it's upper bounded by a constant times gamma 2. So how do we do this decomposition just directly? For a point AB here in the outcome set, I just define P of AB, well, sorry, PAB here is the distribution whose weight on the point AB is P of AB. Okay? And the remaining weight goes to some other output that you add to the outcome set. Right? So now PAB here, the output is either, on Alice's side, it's either A, either some other output that you added. So this is now a Boolean distribution, essentially. And P is, of course, the sum of ABs, of all the PABs, sorry. And what I have to do is just remove all the weight that I put here on the auxiliary output. And this is not a problem because I'm allowed to use negative coefficients in my decomposition. And basically, that's all. After that, for each of these distributions that you have in the decomposition, you apply the fact that it's upper bounded by some constant times gamma 2, and that's all. Right, so this is pretty much straightforward. And as I was saying previously, this upper bound shows that the lower bound on communication is not tight, at least for a general distribution, well, even for a general quantum distribution, because we have this example by Brassard, Cleave, and Tapp from 98 or 99, maybe, which is just it's a distributed version of the Deutsch-Jozsa problem. So basically, they show two things in the paper. First, you can simulate it's a quantum distribution, so you can simulate it perfectly using quantum resources. And then they show a lower bound on the communication cost required to simulate this distribution using communication and shared randomness. They prove a linear lower bound in the input set. Sorry, yeah. Well, whatever. They prove this omega of n lower bound, whereas this shows that if you look at the Bell inequality violation, what you can prove is essentially log of n here. Right, so actually, so how did they prove this lower bound? Well, it's based on some result in communication complexity that was proved using the rectangle bound in communication complexity. Finally, let me talk about how we can use the same ideas to prove, well, the same tools to prove upper bounds. So I'm going to show you this first upper bound. So for any distribution, we can simulate it here with some error delta, which means that the distribution that we get is delta close from P in the statistical distance, using essentially A times B to some constant times nu square of P. This distribution uses shared randomness, as we will see. And also, it works in what is called the simultaneous message passing model, which means that there's no interaction between the players. The players will just send their outputs to a referee, and the referee will just output the value of the distribution, the value given the distribution, right? So as you'll see, this is not a very hard result to prove. Actually, starting from this, you can prove a number of corollaries here were proved in different contexts, either on the simulation of quantum distributions or on the simulation of quantum communication complexity in the classical model. And the proof idea is the following. So once again, I use this affine decomposition of into local distributions, right? And I group them here depending on the sign of the coefficients in front of them, right? And so P is known by everybody, the players and the referee. So the decomposition is also known. I mean, the coefficients Q plus and Q minus, and the distributions P plus and P minus are also known by everybody. The only thing that remains hidden is the input, right? So remember, so P plus, for each pair of input, we have a distribution over the outputs, and the same for P minus, right? But the coefficients Q plus and Q minus are known by everybody. And they don't depend on the inputs or anything. And the way the simulation works is the following. So P plus is local. So simulating P plus doesn't require any communication. The players can just produce the two outputs with no communication. So what they will do is sample these outputs and send them to the referee. And they will do it a lot of time. A lot of time? Well, how many times? Sufficiently many so that if the referee reconstructs the distribution using experimental data, it's sufficiently close to P plus. And they do the same for P minus. And to analyze how many times you need to repeat it such that at the end what you have is close enough from P, you just use your favorite concentration inequality. So Chernoff bound is enough for that. So there's nothing really hard to do here. And after that, the referee just produces the outputs. Okay, let me conclude. So for this model of simulating non-signaling distributions, we proved some general upper and lower bounds, which works for arbitrary inputs, output sets, and it includes the marginals also. And we have this connection with Bell inequality violation. And what I haven't said at all is that in the case of Boolean functions, what we have here is a new proof, well, a dual proof, I should say, of the lower bound that was proved by Linian and Shriveman on classical and quantum communication complexity. And that was a few years ago in 2007, I guess. And that was a big breakthrough in the community, especially because it allowed them to generalize a lot of previously known methods on communication complexity, implying, well, the rank came later, but Fourier method, discrepancy, and some other known method. Especially, it allowed them to prove that some known methods were, in fact, lower bounds on quantum communication complexity. So there's a big problem of proving gaps between classical and quantum communication complexity. So as a consequence of Linian and Shriman's work, all these methods here that are generalized cannot be used for this purpose. This is just to give you an overview of what we have in the computer science side. And I end with some open problems. So, of course, this problem of how much communication has also an interpretation in terms of this communication loophole in testing Bell inequality violation. So maybe we can have a quantitative approach for other loopholes or some even other stuff. Here I say about detector efficiency. Maybe we can have similar approaches, I don't know, for other things that we heard about today. But what I'm saying here, to improve the gap between the upper and lower bound. So remember, for the lower bound, we have a lower bound that is log of nu and an upper bound that is essentially nu square. So, and moreover, we also know that there is a gap between communication and this nu. But for specific classes of functions, it might be possible to improve this gap. And this is a notoriously hard problem in communication complexity also, but maybe using this quantum interpretation, we can find something new for this problem. And finally, one thing I realized really when I was preparing this talk is that essentially what we have done here was comparing two things, Bell inequalities, which are sort of, well, let's call it an algebraical object, at least in this representation using vector space and polytops, with communication, which is more like a combinatorial object. Right, so this is already something interesting, but what we really want, what we would want here to see is to compare maybe not Bell inequalities with communication, but with something closer to information. Right? So what information is revealed? Actually, I don't know exactly how to make it precise, but over the last years, there has been a lot of progresses in comparing this time communication and information. So maybe in the communication complexity community. So maybe there are new ideas to be taken from here. And that's the end of my talk. Thank you.
But are there any questions?
Hi. So one thing I wasn't clear about, and maybe you did mention it, was is your bound a lower bound on the just the worst case, or is it also on the average case?
Sorry, say it again.
Is your lower bound, does it apply to the worst case?
Only yeah. Okay. The worst case.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And maybe another, just a suggestion or idea would be one way you might formulate this last thing you want here would be to minimize the Shannon capacity of a classical channel that can implement it, I suppose, would be.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a lot of things.
I was wondering, so we have an example in the Deutsch-Jozsik problem where the bound is not tight. Do you have examples where your lower bound is tight?
Where
your lower bound is tight?
Say it again.
Well, comparing to the, you had this slide where you said that the Deutsch-Jozsik, your lower bound was not tight.
Yes.
Are there examples where you know that you do achieve known tight bounds?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. But so what might be the issue, if we compare to what's the conjecture in communication complexity, well, yeah, there's a wide open conjecture that this measure that was introduced by Linian and Shriedman, or equivalently, Bell inequality violation, is tight for total functions, or, well, maybe it's more clear to say what is the opposite here, a promise. Here we have a promise problem, that is that there is some relation between the inputs. So maybe if we forget, if we have no such such restriction on the input sets, it might be tight. I don't know. This is a hard problem, for real.
There are no further questions. Please join me in thanking Mark again.